This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello and welcome to the Super J-Cast. My name is Damon. Of course, you know that, and you also probably know, and if you don't, our usual, host. He probably drives the ship more than I do. Joel is away on his month-long vacation slash holiday. He went back home to see family in England, and it's the first time he's been there in, what, 2 years or so, or maybe, definitely more than that. So they're having the time of their life. But you came here for a pro wrestling podcast, specifically New Japan Pro Wrestling, and that's what we do here. So I had a call out and to send out the bat signal, if you will. The Super J-Cast helped the stress. And last week, Nicole came through with flying colors. So I needed somebody to keep that pace and keep that energy and keep that importance. We need to feel important here. I sent out the call and quick to respond. You've seen this person everywhere this week, and I checked out some of his stops as well. It seems like he's the most wanted man in New Japan Pro Wrestling podcasts and talk. You might know him as the statistician, numbers guy.
I prefer research assistant.
Research assistant? Okay, I like that.
I think that's a fair title. I get to make it up as I go.
I think it's fantastic that you could do that. Research assistant for New Japan Pro Wrestling, the great and incredibly handsome Chris Sampson is here, everyone. Welcome, Chris.
Hello. I'm so pleased to finally make my way to the Super J-Cast. I was sent here to keep you on track, actually. so that's what I'm here to do, because, you know, I'm exclusively a serious numbers stats guy. We couldn't possibly have any fun.
No.
So, you know, we could never. So, I was sent here by multiple sources. Have told me to get you on track and keep you on the straight and narrow, and I am here to probably fail miserably at that.
No, I appreciate your guidance. I need a steady hand. You know that. You see me. Actually, I think I've talked about this before, Chris, that I was a little worried about Chicago. And one of the biggest reasons was I knew it was going to be or had the potential to be an all-day drinking affair. I think I did all right. I had four beers at, Kaiser Tiger. And then I started off with the bourbon in the suite. And I remember John Carroll saying, Damon, what are you drinking? And I was like, I'm going to start with some dirty water first. And I had about a quarter of it. And I was like, you know what? This is going to go down a bad path, Chris. I said, this is going to be I can't have this. I put it aside. And I had more hot dogs than I had beer. What do you think of that?
There you go. Look at you. I know. You were definitely not the most inebriated person in the Forbidden Door suite at the United Center. So you have that going for you. I am.
You're the first.
I'm blessed with 8 years of sobriety. So I knew that was not going to be me. But I loved watching, those 20 people in that room have a great time in my city of choice, Chicago, as I think most people know. I'm a Chicago guy, true and true. So we had a great time. Finally meeting you in person in the real world. I have to say, I invited Joel also to join us, but obviously he wasn't making the transatlantic ? Is that the direction he would go?
No, he would have to go
over the Pacific.
Yeah, I think he's going Pacific.
Yeah.
Yes, Tony Khan. The Atlantic is not the most important.
Indeed. But yeah, he was clearly not going to be able to make that trip. But yeah, it's I'm glad to talk to you again in an official capacity, but we had a great time at the in the suite as well.
We did. Now you started a path. I can't let it go uncovered. You mentioned sobriety for 8 years. was that a decision that was like, I just had enough, blah, blah, blah? Or was that something where it was like, okay, I need to stop?
So I drank a lot between my 18th, give or take, birthday and my 28th. I guess we'll give the origin story, Chris Samsa. So in my late teens and 20s, I was a touring musician. So I lived that life. Whatever you can imagine that life was, I saw some of it and partook in quite a bit of the alcoholic beverages and the debauchery. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So nothing too crazy or anything like that. But yeah, there did come a point where I was just like, you know what? I need to not do this anymore. And I want to contribute to society in different ways and in different spaces. And so, yeah, I quit the booze cold turkey, and it's probably one of the best things I've ever done.
Wild. I mean, so as a guy who pretty much everything centers around a glass in my hand, what was the most difficult part of that decision? Like what and maintaining that for 8 years? That's something to fucking be proud of, dude.
Yeah. Well, so at this point, it's just not a part of my life. So I've gotten to that point, which is great. I am mildly obsessive about things. As maybe you can tell from all the detail oriented work that I do in this particular space. So I guess it became this thing that I was obsessed with. I was obsessed with being the guy that doesn't drink. And at the time, 10 years ago or 8 years ago, that wasn't like a trend. Now we're seeing sobriety or non-alcoholic drink pairings, things like that are becoming quite the trend, which I think is great. But I mean, truthfully, I did. I woke up one day and I was like, I can't keep doing this. And I'm going to be a better person if I don't. And, you know, with the support of my now wife and family and whatnot, I just stopped and then just kind of stuck to it. So yeah, it's not like a glamorous story, really. It's just like,
No, it's the best story.
I just stopped.
But no, it really is. It is. Because here's the thing. What you're describing is, again, may seem non-glamorous, but it's reality. You know, sure. What I mean? Like more people are going to take that path than this, oh, I had a vision from God and or you know, whatever. Like more people are going to be like, okay, I gotta do this for me and my health and my family or whatever the reasons may be. Do you miss any of it?
No, not really. Mm. I miss what I used to do while I drank, if that makes sense. So I miss being in a band and touring and living that kind of life. But I don't miss how I felt about halfway hangovers. Through the or just halfway through nights of drinking. Like I don't miss that because I started to like feel bad about myself because I was like, oh, I'm doing it again, you know? So, and that was, sure. That's what kind of triggered, the decision making, 8+ years ago to just say like, I'm going to try to do other things and try to, you know, make up silly pro wrestling jobs for me to do.
Here's the thing though, you're not going to get this on Music of the Mat, right?
True.
You know what I mean? We should. We're 8 minutes in, and we're waist deep here. Look at this.
We've gone all the way into the lore of Chris Samsa already.
I know.
You're disarming.
Listen, I'm a good interviewer.
I'm
not going to lie. Do we know the band? Would we recognize the band?
Probably not. We had a really good run. The band was called Plunket, Plunket. We got some radio play with Q101 in Chicago. We had some radio play on college radio and the like. It was really a pop rock outfit. We toured or played a bunch with bands like the Plain White Tees. That was kind of the range of music. Right when Hey There Delilah hit, we were pals mm-hmm. with them, and they brought us out for a bunch of stuff. So like that was kind of the highest level we reached. But yeah, I mean, tours, and we sold a bunch of records in the UK, and we never got to go over there and things like that. So but the music industry was really going through a big shift towards digital, even though no one really knew what they were doing. So it was a really challenging time to be in a band, but at least I got to be in a band when guys still got like in a van and traveled the country. And I don't think that's how it works anymore. I know that that's not how it works anymore. And I wouldn't trade that experience for anything.
Like every band kind of tells of those days being some of the best. But that's a hard life to live. I don't care how old you are. Like you're going from gig to gig, you know, setting, I mean, I'm sure you were responsible for setting up your own equipment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not like you had this gigantic rider and, you know, there's, you know, but yet on the other hand, like, is there some freedom to that? Like, is there some, like you wake up every day and you're like, I get to be in a band.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that I truly miss the most is not even necessarily playing the shows. It's the time like in the van with my best friends, right? So like, and we just this past March, we got back together. We did like a charity show. It was our first show in 11 years. Bunch of people showed up. It was a great time. But like, truthfully, like that event wasn't even the thing that I enjoyed the most out of that. It was like having an excuse to hang out with my friends. And that kind of probably is the reason that I do the New Japan stuff now, if I want to come full circle, because I'm looking for, I've longed for community, right? And not just community, but like the band at the time, like we always found new venues to do shows. And like we wanted to provide kind of those opportunities for people to come together and for there to be a community, the scene, quote unquote. If you're in kind of a punk rock band, it's called the scene.
Sure.
So like that's, I think, part of why I gravitated towards not only like the New Japan community, which is just so many good and fun and nice people, but also looking for an avenue to contribute to that community, which is kind of what I found with I don't know, all the stats and research and info that I pulled together. And that's the thing that I like so much about this. So, I do kind of tie that all together.
That's interesting to me because, like, we kind of think of it as we being, speaking in general terms here, like the stats that you provide and the articles that you write up, I mean, they're so good that, you know, Kevin Kelly's using them and uses them a lot and often because they're interesting tidbits and facts and things that like make your eyebrows rise. But in the same breath, you're talking about giving back to the community almost as if you're creating some type of art through this very scientific-y kind of thing. Like why do you think those two worlds meld with you?
I just think it was an opening. To some extent, right? Like, I watched New Japan for a while before I even started to look into this stuff or to put this all together. And I started to hear Kevin and Chris and Rocky like reference both history and statistics, right? Like really baseline stuff, wins, losses, this, that, and the other thing, right? Like very simple, easy to understand stuff. And I was like, man, there's more there. Like, this is a sport, right? Like, this is presented as a sport. And I love pro wrestling, but I'm a sports guy, too. Baseball, specifically, which is probably where the desire for statistics come into play. Because baseball was kind of the first major sport to really go that route with
sure.
Detailed
analytics and everything.
Detailed yeah. analytics, right? And that was the idea. I was just like, well, what if I mess around with some pro wrestling stats? Because New Japan like posts results. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Something to work with, right? Like times, who took the fall, you know, all of that. And then, you know, when it comes down to it, I organized it a little bit. I have my true day job involved some data organization and kind of tying pieces together. And I took some of those documents, truthfully, from my day job and started to plug in like wrestling data and created kind of a lane for myself where I can contribute to the community.
I think it's incredible because, well, I'll follow up with this question first and then I'll make the point. Do you find that you hear more from people that have maybe a sports background or they're sports fans? Like, are those the type of people that you hear most from, or do you hear from others who just say, oh my God, that's just, these are just incredible tidbits to help me learn this promotion?
I think my objective when it comes to like sending information to the, say, the broadcast team, is to provide some things that a first time watcher would just understand, right? Like, any, most people understand sports and some of the kind of traditional data points that go with sports. And the more that we can bring that to life in a pro wrestling setting, the more it's going to be approachable and easy to understand. And you're going to understand who the great wrestlers are and who the not so great wrestlers are, just based on their records or their times or their, you know, their ability to stay in a match or their ability to be the person who gets the winning fall, right? Like, all these weird little things. And it helps tell the story of which wrestler is, say, the favorite, or which wrestler is the underdog, but then here's a reason that the underdog might win, right? That's the most fun stuff to kind of pull through, is like the reason to believe in the underdog. And, you know, a lot of the times that plays out in professional wrestling because it's professional wrestling. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that's the answer I got for you, I guess.
No, yeah. So were you like a math guy in school, or were you more of like a sports math guy? Like, I would consider myself a sports math guy. So, like, I love hockey analytics,
yeah.
And I love, like, those, you know, war charts. And even in baseball, I think they have a war chart.
Oh, yeah.
Or something similar, mm-hmm. to that, like a value that they, you know, against, like, just a generic player.
Yeah. It's,
like, those things I've always loved. Like, was that you as a kid?
Yeah. I mean, to some extent. So, as a kid, I was the kid who, like, played a baseball video game, and I tried to be Hawk Harrelson while I was playing the game. Like, I wanted to call the game. And, you know, with that came needing to have knowledge about it. So I was not great at school in general. So I don't, and I never played a lot of sports. Like, I played baseball, Little League and stuff, but I didn't play anything into high school or anything like that. So I've always been an avid sports watcher and enjoyer, and I want to understand the analytics of it, which I am able to do just via stats. Even sports that I don't watch that frequently, if I pay attention to some of the statistics and things that get thrown around, just even on the baseline, I can kind of understand who's who and what's what.
Obviously it felt good, but I guess the first time you start hearing your name on these broadcasts and your site and your work, like, what was that? What was going on through your head there?
So, I'll tell a story there. So there's the 2019 G1, and I had put together my first, what I called the G1 box score, which is, I mean, a box score is a really, really familiar thing to most people who enjoy sports. And especially if you go back when you were reading sports results out of a newspaper, you looked for the box score. For specifically for baseball, for sure, but I'm sure other sports have something similar to it. So I made this thing, I put it on Twitter. I had like no Twitter followers at the time, right? Because who am I? And I get this email, and it's unknown to me. It was Kevin Kelly, and he was like, "Hey,
right?
Can you keep this, or like, can you make this available to me, and I'll keep it up to date?" And I was like, "Hey, dude, glad you like it. I'll keep it up to date. No worries." And I didn't know Kevin Kelly's real name at the time, so I didn't know that that right. was him. Shortly thereafter, I figured out that that was him, and I was like, "Hey, man, I'll keep this updated. I'll even just send it right to you, so you don't have to worry about getting into, you know, whatever, Google Sheets or whatever." And like, honestly, the rest is history. I just never stopped sending him stuff. And now sometimes they even like ask me for specific stuff, and I have made some friends there and whatnot. So, but yeah, I mean, it truly just started as this thing that I like posted on Twitter and tagged everyone, which I would never do now because I just feel like it's so, so nerdy. But hell, it worked. And then honestly, I just like started diving in and figuring out where I could be helpful.
I mean, Kevin Kelly's a huge sports guy. Yeah. I would think Kevin Kelly would be in some type of sports broadcasting if he wasn't doing pro wrestling.
Without a doubt.
Did that make your decision a little bit easier, knowing that, you know, here's a guy that obviously likes the sport element of it? I'm just trying to think of another name who would call New Japan Pro Wrestling that would not, you know, be as sporty, I guess. You know, like if like Michael Cole, I don't know, just this, you know, could you see a path just to do what you do and to kind of know that Kevin Kelly would be a guy who would appreciate it?
Yeah, so with Kevin, it was obvious that he would enjoy it or use it maybe because he was clearly doing his own research at the time even. And, right. And he still does. Let's not mince words here. Like, Kevin does all the prep he's always done, to my knowledge. Like, I know that I send him everything I can think of, but I also know that, you know, if he's on the plane over to Japan, like, he's pulling stuff on Cage Match or you know, Sport Pro Wrestling or whatever. He's looking at stuff himself too. So, but he was saying things like wins and losses, and, you know, at the beginning of the G1 and the first match of the G1, this person is X amount, you know, X and X, 0-4. They've never won their first G1 match. Things like that. He was like throwing out there already, which I'm sure subconsciously kind of inspired me to look at it and say, like, oh, like, this seems like it would be useful to these guys, and I can go further with it because I don't have to travel and sit at a broadcast table.
Right. You could.
I would love to.
You could very easily slide in. Well, when I say very easily slide in, like you just doing this right now, it seems very natural and very comfortable for you. I don't know if you're freaking out inside. You shouldn't be. No. Nobody listens to this.
I don't think that's true.
I don't know. What do you think? Well, I'll ask this first. Could you do this with any other promotion? Do you think, A, would you have the interest in doing that? And B, do you think that what you do would fit anywhere else but with this promotion?
I think I've catered what I do and how I look at wrestling based on what I try to, you know, contribute to New Japan to some extent. So, but I, you know, when I watch Noah tries to do a lot of the sports like presentation as well. Especially recently and with their English broadcast and could I be helpful there? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but I don't have the data. I would need to do the data mining, which would take quite a while to start to put together. And in AEW, when AEW started, I was like, oh, well, now I'll just have a website and I'll cover New Japan and AEW. And like, honestly, like, AEW got so, I got so bogged down by covering AEW with Dark and Dark Elevation and these like 30 match things, and I just couldn't keep up with it in the way that I wanted to track right. The things that I needed to track. So maybe yes, but would it get as well used? Probably not, right? Because we've got a good rhythm. I've got a good rhythm with Kevin and a good relationship with Chris Charlton and even some of the other guys that have sat at the table. I've sent them some stuff. So, you know, I think everyone knows how to read my work and kind of put it to good use.
Are you sending stuff in real time, or do you just prep beforehand, or both?
So I probably send stuff. Depends on the tour, but I send stuff before every live English broadcast. Yeah, pretty much. I skip some road tubes that don't have like title matches and stuff on it. But yeah, pretty much every live English broadcast and a significant number of the taped ones too. If there's something interesting, definitely if there's a title or a tournament match, I'm compiling things, putting them into a PDF that's always in the same format and sending it along to whoever I know is going to be at the table.
And how long does that take you on average?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm pretty efficient.
All right.
I've gotten it worked out to the point where to get just kind of the core statistics and data for, say, one of these G1 shows, if I'm just covering the G1, say the four G1 tournament matches, like I can get that together in less than an hour, depending on how deep I want to dig and if there's something that pops up. But, you know, truthfully, like I've got a document set up where like I plug in the opponents that are against each other, and it pumps out the their history against each other. And then I can plug in the venue, and it'll give me their record in the venue, and or the city, and it'll give me their records in the city. So like, and then I just kind of compile all that, and that's been a learning curve for me to learn how to like make all these documents kind of interact with each other. But yeah.
Now, was that in Excel, or are you using like jQuery, or is that what it's called, or Python?
It is. So I use some Python to collect the data from various places around the internet. And then, and that was built for me for somebody else, a friend. I don't know how to code that well, but a pal of mine put that together for me. And then everything else I do is in Excel. Yeah. It's it's this like massive Excel document that I'm looking at right now, because I just added all of my G1 stuff. It used to be a separate document. Now it's all in the same. So it's just like, it's this silly big spreadsheet.
That's pretty awesome. Like, I love to do that. Like, in the sense of, like I would play daily fantasy hockey, and I would have these spreadsheets of who they're playing and the third line versus the first line and how much ice time, blah, blah, blah. Like, trust me, there is a huge, huge bit of jealousy that you're able to put something like that together for a promotion that you obviously really enjoy watching. What do you think? And again, we'll get into the pro wrestling talk. Trust me, but I find this fascinating. I'm sorry. And again, nobody listens, Chris, so it doesn't matter.
I listen. I literally I'll drop this. I am I'm on my two favorite New Japan podcasts this week. So Keeping It Strong Style, my pals, Jeremy and Josh.
Yes.
Right.
I know them very
old
well.
Old pals of mine. And then JCast. Like, those are the two New Japan podcasts that I listen to every single week. There's others out there that I'll drop into, right? But like, I have a problem this week because I'm on both of those shows, which means I'm
See, I felt bad. Like, I did. You know what? I felt bad. I did feel bad because I didn't want them to think that. Because I know you've been on there before.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I don't want them to feel like I'm cheat. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's their thing. Yeah. Chris Sampson is there. You know what I mean? So I hopefully there's no hard feelings.
All no, right. They know I'm here. I also cleared my appearance with some other friends of mine to make sure that the radioactive heat stays away from me. but now I'm spending the time with you. I'm gonna have all this free time on my like audio feeds, because I'm not gonna go back and re-listen to both of these shows. So that's gonna save me like six hours of listening.
You're gonna pop in the car with the missus, and you're gonna be like, listen to how great I was on the JCast.
I fucking nailed it. She doesn't need to hear me talk any more than I talk at home.
Now, she seemed like she how did you guys meet, number one? And then number two, she seems like she's a bit of a fan of the pro wrestling, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We my wife Megan, we worked together at a coffee shop in the, let's see, late 2000s. And then she left. She went to college, did college things. I went and did band things. And then eventually we ended up working together again at more of a management level, both of us as managers. And we ended up getting together, and now we've been married for almost 4 years, and that's all great. But yeah, she is a pro wrestling fan. She's gone to a bunch of different events with me. She bought me a plane ticket and a ticket to the last time New Japan went to Hammerstein in New York.
Nice.
Like, that was cool. That was the first time I saw New Japan live in front of me. So that was very cool. Very cool of her. But yeah, we started our honeymoon with the Royal Rumble just because it was like in that it was in Arizona and we were headed to California, and that was kind of the timing that we were going to do the honeymoon anyway. So we just stopped in Phoenix and went to the Royal Rumble, which, and you know, WWE whatever aside, the Royal Rumble's fun. So
yeah,
and it checked off a baseball stadium off of my list as well.
Did a little Diamondbacks.
Yep, exactly. Okay. So but she's a fan. We're a pro wrestling family when it comes down to it. She's clearly not as into it as I am, but she really does seem to have an appreciation for what I do and what I've been able to carve out here in this community. And she loves, I mean, we hosted a barbecue when everyone was in town for Forbidden Door. I know that you weren't able to make it because you were doing your own thing, but she loves the community element of it the same way that I do.
That's pretty awesome. Like that's the thing that I find, like I bust balls and shit like that, but that is an amazing part of this. Mm-hmm. Like this, that idea of, oh my God, there's a dude in South Carolina listening to my nonsense. You know what I mean? Like right. That's, and, or like when you go to the Tokyo Dome and somebody comes, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's like, kind of blows my mind sometimes.
It's crazy.
You know?
Yeah. But it's all, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you're like me, maybe you're not, but like when I was a teenager, I started a band so I could make friends. Right. And then now as an adult and much older than a teenager, like I started to do this and then found my people. Right. And like now some of my best friends, truthfully right now, some of my best friends in the world are because I do this pro wrestling stuff. And, you know, I've gotten to meet them and chat with them in various different ways. And, you know, I think that's why we do this stuff. I think that's why I do this stuff. And, you know, it's hard to make friends as an adult. And here I am talking to a new friend in you.
Right. Well, you know, listen.
Oh, we're now. Okay.
Come on, girl.
All right. I see. All right.
No, we're friends. Trust me. We're friends. Yes. I find it very difficult to meet new people.
Absolutely.
I do find it very difficult.
It is about the hardest thing you can do as a dude in their 30s, 40s, 50s, whatever, right? How else do you meet people besides being a part of something that's kind of niche?
Yeah. What do you think New Japan, just to change gears, what do you think New Japan Pro Wrestling does better than any other pro wrestling company?
They wrestle.
The matches themselves?
They actually have wrestling, first of all, in the wrestling shows. And the whole show is centered around wrestling and what happens inside the ring and between the bells. And I think that they do that better than anybody else. Not just the in-ring, but just the fact that that is how the product is presented. I was talking to someone when they were in Chicago and they said, we are in Japan, we are a sport. And that's how our shows are made. That's how our shows are laid out. That's how they're put onto broadcast. They're a sport. So they go until they end. They don't necessarily have a 2-hour runtime and 15-minute segments and commercial breaks and this and that and the other thing. And, you know, that is true. It's presented as a sport. It's presented as a series of matches. It's more similar to UFC than it is to WWE. And I think that's what allows people to kind of come in and out from it too. Cause you don't necessarily have to keep up with a frantic amount of storyline advancements on every, you know, 2 weekly shows or, you know, whatever it may be. Like you kind of know the score and you know when the big events are and you can drop in for that, or you can watch all the road twos like the wackos that, you know, we are sometimes. But, yeah, I mean, I think that just the fact that it is presented as a sport is the most important and the best thing that they do better than any other pro wrestling company.
Do you think they lost their focus during the trying COVID times, we'll call it? Do you think that focus got lost a little bit?
I don't know. I read the rumors. And I you know, I talked to some of the people that sourced the rumors, yourself and Joel included. But did they? I don't know. Not really. The evil stuff. Everyone points to that as like the checking out point. But when it comes down to it, now look at it now. What do you want more? Do you want Great Okan to win, or do you want Evil to lose? Like, we've probably gotten to the point where everyone just wants him to lose no matter who he's facing. And that was the goal. So, yeah. And that's, you know, that's pro wrestling. There's always going to be that stuff. I mean, it can't just be a bunch of Tom Lawlers coming in, you know, as much as I love Tom Lawler, like, it can't just be that. There has to be character too. And I think that was highlighted a little bit, and yeah, there's been some missteps along the way, but I think we've course corrected pretty well.
I do too. Like, and I'll go so far as to say that name me another promotion that's had such a string of bad luck with COVID and trying to get through what everyone keeps thinking is the longest delay ever. But, you know, it is what it is. A lot of that stuff is out of their hands. Are you good with what you've seen so far with the partnership in AEW?
Yeah. I think a lot of people made up a show that they wanted it to be, and then that wasn't the Forbidden Door show in particular, which is kind of the biggest event of the partnership with AEW. Like, I think a lot of people kind of headbooked it and then didn't get what they expected, but then the wrestlers showed up and they wrestled and it was awesome.
Right.
Like, that was very telling to me, that like the wrestlers showed up, the crowd showed up, and that was a heck of a show. And that was a heck of a fun time. And shoot, I don't need these guys to spend a month in America building their matches on weekly TV. I just need someone to announce a card and I'll be there at the next one. Like, whatever. I trust that that's going to be a great show now. Well, you know, I think that if you get too bogged down with some of the rumors of, you know, oh, Tony Khan cut off this match from happening in New Japan, or, you know, this person can't travel to Japan, and G1 entrance and yada yada yada, like if you get bogged down with that, you're gonna choose a side. And to me, it's just great to see some of these guys showing up and doing something cool and getting in front of a hot crowd again, because I'm sure that was a selling point. And I'm curious to see where it goes. I want to see an event happen in Japan. I think that that's an important I think that'll be an important line to cross too, because right now it's all beneficial to, it's not exclusively beneficial, but the major benefactor here has been AEW, right? A lot of action on their TV, a lot of people in the United Center, a lot of pay-per-view buys, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sure New Japan's getting some sort of cut of that. But I think the primary benefactor has been AEW, and I want to see that, you know, get paid back. You know, mostly because I'm curious to see where they're going to go. But I know that the travel and the visas and things like that are much harder to acquire when you're trying to go to Japan, especially still right now.
Yeah, they're still going through it. Mm-hmm. That's apparently another wave is underway. So fingers crossed.
But we got Bad Dude Tito into the country, and
we found a way.
That's a win.
No doubt. It kind of is. Why not? With G1, and when we started, I was like, I can't believe we're already at G1. I can't believe how fast this year has gone. It's kind of like the midway point of the year. Like, what has stood out to you the most so far for New Japan this year?
I feel like it feels stable. Like, everything feels normal. It just in the sense, I mean, you put the belt on Okada and everything feels better, right? And that is kind of my overarching like feeling, and part of that for me is just the calendar, right? So we had We had the New Japan Cup in March at a normal time, right? Then we had Best of Super Juniors in May, June, a normal time. And now we've got the G1 in the summer, in the middle of July and into August, a normal time, right? Like, so the calendar has reset. We had 2 years of both COVID calendaring and Olympic calendaring, and everything feels right again, right? Like, it's July 13th and I'm prepping for the G1, and I can wake up. I'm a live watcher for many of these shows, which I'm sure people will tell me I'm crazy for, but it's, I love it. I can get up and the sun is already coming up and I can start to watch these G1 shows, which is what I so enjoyed about G1s of the past, is that like I'm not like dragging my ass out of bed to watch something while the sun's still down on most nights. So everything feels like summer and we're ready to roll. And I couldn't be more excited for this G1 because it does feel like with all the kind of new guys coming in, I'm so curious to see how some guys are going to be. So everything feels, you know, we're not seeing these big like stars pop up, Moxley, Danielson, Jericho, whatever. Like, we're not there yet, which is, it became a huge part of what I think made New Japan a really fun promotion to pay attention to. And I think we're going to get back to that. But we've got a bunch of new, fresh faces, outsiders, people from America, people from other places in the world that are starting to pop up. And that feels like New Japan is an international promotion again, because I think New Japan really is the most international promotion out there. And that is something that they leveraged to great success for a long time.
Yeah, there is something to be said about those partnerships, and whether they're strong business wise or not, it does feel like, I always do love the Super J Cup feel, you know, where mm-hmm. it's the different promotions, and you kind of got a taste of that a little bit more with the Best of the Super Juniors this year, and I think this G1 kind of feels, at least in you know the past 8 years, 10 years, like it feels like a real international kind of event with different promotions all kind of chugging along with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only checkbox that I wasn't able to check when I was looking at the entrance was someone from, say, like Impact, because we know that relationship still exists too. But everything else pretty much got covered off. New guys, returning guys, an AEW guy, some people that we know that the company is behind that are fresh to the tournament. So yeah, it does. And Best of Super Juniors is the most international tournament that they do every year. And I think that they delivered a lineup this year that was pretty close to what you could expect 3-4 years ago, pre-COVID.
Yeah. Were you surprised by anyone that was there, that was announced, that's in G1? I guess, what was your biggest surprise guy? And then was there any disappointment in any of the lack of that superstar firepower that you were talking about?
I mean, I would have loved to see, you know, anyone in that top tier of like the U.S. talent, right? Everyone desperately wants a Bryan Danielson G1, right? Who wouldn't? Why wouldn't you want to see that dude wrestle, you know, some of your favorite wrestlers? I was a little surprised to see, I guess, El Fantasmo, just because like it feels like a quick ascension into heavyweight. But he had teased it during Best of Super Juniors, so in that way, I wasn't super surprised. But everyone else, a lot of these guys, you could sense that they've been waiting to get into a G1, right? Lawler, and then Jonah, once he got signed, you can kind of tell that they're behind him, and I think the intention is for him to spend more time in Japan than on Strong. And then, you know, and I think Archer is actually a great AEW addition if you can't get one of those like god tier guys, because right. He's familiar and he's over and he knows how to do a G1 and he's really fun. He's a really good wrestler.
What I don't think people recognize enough is the time commitment that a guy like, again, Lance Archer or Jonah or Tom Lawler, I mean, they're in Japan for a month, mm-hmm. over a month. And it is hot as balls over there. You know what I mean? Like, Like, I'm always, like, between the jet lag, the absolute extreme heat, and just the fact that you're away from home that long, like, to me, anybody who makes it over there for this tournament, I got to tip my cap to, because it's not like any other normal pro wrestling. It's absolutely grueling, and I'm sure you've heard the stories of the just like the walking wounded after a G1. It tears people up.
Yeah, and you know, when it comes down to it, people will point to them wrestling fewer G1 matches during this tour, right? But the fact of the matter is, pretty much everyone's on all 17 of the first 17, you know, the block nights that are announced. Almost everyone is on every one of those cards. So it's not like they're taking whatever 4 or 5 days off completely. Like, they got to make towns, and they're hanging out in a bus, and they in different hotel rooms every night. Like, this is a pretty hefty tour. You know, and you look at, you know, a 31 day span from the first night to the last night. And yeah, you've got 6 block matches in there, but you have 17 appearances for most of these guys, which is plenty. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of wrestling, yeah. A lot of places to make. And you're right. I mean, you know, especially guys that haven't ever done it, you always want to see how those guys kind of show up for it.
I got to put over your article that was posted, I believe, today on voicesofwrestling.com. And you do it every year. It looks like you started out with the A block. Like, for something like this, for an article like this, it feels like you spent a ton of time coming up with a lot of these little nuggets. Am I wrong in saying that?
I don't know. I wouldn't say a ton. Like I said, like, I've got a lot of this stuff automated, and for the G1 specifically, so there's 2 times a year that, like, my brain shifts gear, and it's G1 season and Wrestle Kingdom season. And there's so many of these little pieces to the puzzle that, like, kind of float around in my brain until I check into it. And then I think, like, oh yeah, that thing about this guy in this, you know, tournament or whatever is worth highlighting. So, but yeah, all the tables and things of the sort, most of it's in the prep. So the company was so kind to announce the field way early this year. So I've been able to just kind of poke away at it over the course of a couple of weeks. And I have never been more prepared for a G1 to kind of have an easy breezy time and actually probably enjoy watching some of the events, as opposed to, you know, compiling data. Like, I already had it all. So, but you know, over the course of the last, say, 3 years, yeah, I've put some time into it. Absolutely.
Right. Just building the tool, yeah, to make it easy.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, like, learning how to make it easy and easily digestible too, because, you know, essentially what I post on Voices of Wrestling is really similar to what I send Kevin or, Ian or Chris or whoever's on broadcast. Right. So, I have found a way to kind of, like, dual purpose that task by, you know, providing some content to my pals at Voices of Wrestling, as well as, you know, cutting out some of the, you know, the pictures and the prettiness and sending it off to the broadcast team.
Like, I think that's a skill too, Chris. And I don't want to, like, just hand wave that. Like, there's one thing about compiling the information, right? But there is certainly another complete factor of making it presentable, making it easy to digest, and just, like, every flick of the mouse, there's an interesting tidbit. How much does that play into what you do, in the sense of, you talked about community, you talked about, you know, kind of like the artistic side of your brain with the band stuff, and again, being able to present this information in a way that people can really sink their teeth into. Like, how important is that step for you?
Well, I don't think there's any point to doing it if it's not going to be, I guess, consumable or palatable. I follow this guy on Twitter. His Twitter handle is Sox Nerd, and he's a White Sox. He's the guy who does, like, the White Sox statistics on the like the Jumbotron at White Sox games.
Oh,
and
nice.
He, yeah, right. And that's like his job now. And I, he does such a good job of concisely communicating like really broad, wild statistics. You know, I mean, like my goal for any bullet point that I'm kind of including in a note or including on one of these posts is to make it succinct enough to fit into one tweet. Because if it's not 280 characters or less, it's too many words, it's too detailed, it's too much to the point where it's not meaningful. So that is always kind of the goal. Whether or not I'm going to tweet them out or not, that it's just a good threshold to try to hit.
Yeah. What's your favorite stat? Like, there's so much information of time between matches and time in the ring and average G1 points for a pro wrestler's career. And just tidbits like, you know, Toru Yano being one of the, you know, top four guys in overall, you know, match quantity in G1. Like, what are some of those things that you, like, when you see it, it's like, ah, that's what gets me going. Is it like time in the ring? Is it history in G1? Like, what's the thing that kind of wakes you up?
In particular right now in the G1, like I love watching Tanahashi's statistics just like get further and further away from everybody else, whether it's most G1 wins or most G1 matches or most G1 ring time. You know, I've kind of carved out a niche with the ring time thing because I think I'm the only person that kind of tracks that. And so, I mean, like Will Ospreay in 2019, like truly like opened my eyes to say like, oh, that's a big deal in this company. When you're at that level, you've got X amount of hours of singles ring time, throughout X amount of tournaments or this amount of time or whatever it may be. And those are the real athletic, data points, right? Like, listen, it's pro wrestling, like the wins, the losses, someone's deciding what those are. Right. But to be a,
wait a minute, what?
Oh, I'm sorry.
What are you saying?
Thank you. Ah, ha, gotta go. The athleticism of being able to perform at that level for that amount of time over this, you know, period of a year or 2 years or this 1 month period of a G1 tournament, like that's real. Like there's real stuff there, right? Like that's a true testament to the physical condition that some of these guys are in. And so that's the stuff that I really, really like to point out and pick out, is that like these guys are really athletes and they put in a ton of work. And, you know, oftentimes it's way more than you would expect, and it's way more frequent than you would expect. And it's, I like to highlight the, I guess, legitimate aspects of pro wrestling.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I love it. I mean, I think that's what brought a lot of us to the dance originally, right? Has the work that you put in, has that helped you kind of go back in time and maybe rewatch older G1s and I wouldn't say get a new sense of appreciation, but just kind of, you know, you're doing these stats. Do you ever go back and kind of catch up on all those old G1s?
Yeah, I have a playlist of G1 finals that I will put on anytime I'm working on G1 stuff, and it just rolls through on my TV, and it goes from number one to number 31, and you know, sometimes I pull up just the right one. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that I look at those differently now, but I do try to think of like what my work might have looked like during that time, and the, you know, the stuff that I pulled together. And I have a box score for every G1 back to G1 number one. I've compiled all of that, and it exists in my files just so I can say this person has the best G1 ever by, you know, the statistic of ring time or wins or losses or, you know, whatever streak anyone's running. Like, I can start to highlight some of those records, but it's cool once you kind of run into those, you can go back and watch a lot of it, whether you find that stuff on New Japan World or a hard drive somewhere. You can go back and be like, wow, that's cool. Maybe they didn't even know that was happening, but, you know, there's some major athletic accomplishments for some of those older G1s too.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing month. Like, I always look forward to it. It does scratch that itch of sports and pro wrestling. And I think that's the best time of the year, and it starts what? 2 days, 3 days, the 16th,
yeah.
Right? In Sapporo. I can't believe it's here. Do you like this format? Do you like the four blocks?
I'm like getting used to analyzing it. Cause so, you know, the same way anybody else does, right? You had two blocks of 10 and you kind of knew what the story arcs were going to be, right? Someone's going to start off slow and come back and probably win a block. And someone's going to start off hot and then fall off because it's their first G1 and they didn't know how to pace themselves and yada, 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 right? Like, and now we've got, I have a whole fresh look of things to look at because it's a whole new format. And then beyond it just being a four block format, they've done this kind of, I don't even know how to explain the scheduling, but you're getting one match from each block on each show, which means the opportunity exists for the, I guess, kayfabe schedule makers to maybe be more favorable to certain wrestlers, just in how their schedule has been laid out. So like their individual schedule. So that's been a really fun thing for me to pay attention to and also, you know, highlight in some of my coverage, but, ultimately, I think that it's gonna be hard to follow because you're not just getting like immersed in one block each night, and I'm worried about that. But otherwise, I think each of the shows will be of a certain quality because they were able to kind of spread out the more meaningful matches, because they had kind of a blank slate. It didn't have to be one block or the other.
There was an interesting, and again, I can't put over hard enough the article that you wrote for Voices of Wrestling, and I'm assuming we're going to do all the blocks, A, B, C, and D, and A is out there now. You made mention of Jonah and how weird it was spread out. Mm-hmm. Like, his first night is on the 17th, but then he doesn't wrestle again until, I mean, singles match-wise, tournament-wise, what is it, like 14? Was it 14 days? 12, how many days was it?
He has 12 days between block matches. So he wrestles his first block match on the 17th, and then his second is not until the 30th of July. Yeah. So yeah, that's the longest stretch anyone has. He has a 12-day stretch where he's not wrestling in block matches. And then Tai Chi has an 11-day stretch, and there's one more long. Oh, El Fantasmo also has a 12-day stretch in the middle of his tournament. So,
Do you think? Do you think that helps? Do you think that helps them? I mean, obviously, days off help anyone recoup. But do you think there's anything with ring rust? I mean, that seems like a long time between singles matches,
yeah,
doesn't
it? Absolutely. If it's me, I want. I equate this to kind of a pitcher in Major League Baseball, right? They go on 4 days rest, almost like that's the optimal pitcher schedule, is like the starting pitcher, he pitches, then he has 4 days off, and then he pitches again. And I would assume that a similar, at least like structured cadence would be helpful to a wrestler, right? So if I look at someone like Great O'Khan's schedule, like he doesn't start his G1 until the 26th. So that's the sixth night of the tour. And then he's essentially, aside from one turnaround, that's 2 days. Every turnaround to each match is just 3 days. He doesn't have a block match for 3 days, and then he wrestles, and then he doesn't have a block match for 3 days, and then he wrestles, and then he does. So like that seems to be, to me, on the surface, that's a favorable schedule.
Yeah, I would think I would want that. You know, mm-hmm. I would want that every third day. Because I do think that you would want a schedule and a cadence, kind of like you described the pitcher. I'm always fascinated too that, like, talking to some of the guys that perform in a G1 or have performed in a G1 or are currently performing in a G1. The fact that they really have no idea going in. For the most part.
Yeah. No.
Until they show up to the building of what, you know, that's, to me, that's amazing. Like, do you think that helps a wrestler, or do you think that is hurtful?
It probably helps. I think so. I think the more you think about where you're going, the less you're focused on what's happening right in front of you. Right. And I think that that's an important element to just like giving your all. From a match quality perspective, right? And putting yourself in a favorable light with the people who are making those decisions, you want to be the guy that puts in maximum effort no matter what. And that, I think that is more likely to happen when you don't know that you're going to go on a five-match losing streak to end your tournament. Like, And I don't know how much that's, I think that stuff matters a varied amount depending on who you are in as a wrestler and where you're at in your career. But I think that, you know, to just say, I'm going to show up and do the work and whatever the work calls for is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to do it great. Then I think that, you know, the less, you know, the better.
I tend to agree with that. Yep. Who's based off your number crunching and that massive spreadsheet you have.
Hey.
That's a pickup line. I think it might be a pickup line. Who's a person that might be flying under the radar that we should be paying attention to a little bit more?
I think we're going to see, once Jonah gets going after that 12-day, those 12 days between block matches, I think we're going to see something really cool from him. He's got a stretch where he's got 3 matches in 5 days. And I think that that'll be fun to see. And I think he goes through Cobb, Okada, and Archer all in the span of 5 days. And I think that that's kind of a run that I've got pegged as, you know, something that I hope we see something really good out of. In the B block, I'm watching Great Okan, of course. And I think he's got, like I just said, I think he's got a favorable schedule to have fans keep up with him easily, if that makes sense, right? Because you don't have that big gap. I think those are the two. And I think, you know, Okan rattled off 5 losses to end his tournament last year, which was disappointing to some of the biggest Great Okan fans on the internet. But, you know, I think we'll see a little bit more of a balanced tournament from him too. So like those are kind of the big two that I'm paying attention to, because once you get into C block, it's really kind of the old guard and Hanare, right? And I hope for the best for Hanare's first G1 as well, but most of those guys are real old school G1 guys, and you're going to get some great match quality out of that. But there's, I don't know that there's anything that's going to really surprise anyone in C. And, you know, D is kind of similar, where it's a bunch of known entities. So A and B have kind of the younger and less experienced guys.
Do you see this being there's a lot of Bullet Club matches, mind you, but do you see this being a centerpiece for what is well rumored to be a summer of Bullet Club?
I mean, I think it kind of has to be. If they're ever going to do it, they have to do it now, because otherwise they're just going to keep stretching it out. So, you know, when it comes to Bullet Club stuff, I think the most interesting block, I guess, is the D block, because you've got El Phantasmo, Yujiro, and Juice, right? So that's a lot of Bullet Club for a 7-person block. So that's, you know, worth noting. Though none of those guys are necessarily the people you would imagine to be at the forefront of any of the big Bullet Club story, right? So they have kind of kept those guys away from each other, right? You don't see Jay and Evil fighting. You don't even see Bad Luck Fale in a block with any other Bullet Club representation. He's the only Bullet Club member who doesn't have a Bullet Club versus Bullet Club match. So, but I mean, if you look at the last block night, you've got Jay versus Tama Tonga, and you know, while Tama Tonga has been kind of bounced from Bullet Club, like that's a Bullet Club match, right? That that's a big part of that story. So, and that'll be highlighted just based on where it's placed in the tournament.
Toriano, he's going to get that surprise win, right? Always does. Definitely expected. Who's the surprise win on this year?
I mean, who in that block would be surprising is kind of the question, right? You got Archer, Fale, Cobb, Jonah, Lawler, Okada. And Okada, right? Okada would obviously be the surprise. It's early in the tournament. It's the second match, I think, for both of them. So that would be the most surprising, right? Otherwise, you know, any of those guys, you could see a banana peel situation with Yano.
Right.
So, but again, Okada and Yano haven't wrestled that often because they've been chaos together for so long, and there's no other reason to do so unless they're in a G1 together. So, I hope that's fun, right? Like that's kind of all I can ask for from a Toriano experience.
Are you into the Toriano?
Not really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do like how he's the anomaly of some of my, you know, data points, right? So there's been moments where like I'm looking at say averages or a median or something, and I'm like, God, I gotta get rid of the Yano matches. And then like I go to that and everything changes. But he's a part of it, right? He's a part of the whole situation.
Is there a guy that, you know, how every year before he was no longer in it, but every year it was Shibata's winning. It's like Shibata's not winning. Ishii's winning. Ishii's not winning this. Is there a guy that you see on this list that people are gravitating toward and you're just kind of looking at your data points and being like, that's not happening?
I don't know that there's a that's not happening, but I think there is a groundswell for Zack Sabre Jr. after last year's G1 when he really kind of made his mark on the tournament, on the G1. So, but I this year in particular, I think is really interesting because anyone can win a block, right? Because at this point, you win a block and you're just heading into the semifinals and you can get bounced before you even make it to the final. So right. I hope that somebody surprising wins a block, even if they're going to get bounced in the semis, right? But I hope that somebody fun and surprising or new wins a block and really establishes themselves like a Zack Sabre Jr., right? Like, because then at least they've got that under their belt and they can kind of grow from there. You know, ZSJ, or if you want to say Great O'Khan, or, you know, even someone like El Phantasmo, if you really want to make a guy and say, like, this dude's a heavyweight and he's here to stay, like, there's a chance that those types of guys could win a block and lose in the semis, and then they don't even appear on the kind of list of people that went to the finals.
Yeah. Who are your picks? Let's do that now. Coming out of A, B, C, and D. Who do you have coming out of A first?
It's tough to pick against Okada in A. Right. I just don't see anyone else on this list that I think is going through. I think they ran the Jeff Cobb story last year, right? And Cobb had a great G1 tournament. But I don't think he's got the same momentum coming into this year's tournament. And the Cobb Okada match is the first, you know, it's the first main event of the tournament, which is going to be a huge moment, I think, for Jeff Cobb. But I also, I think it actually probably works against his kind of momentum. So, yeah, I mean, tough to pick against Okada. And again, just headed into the semis. You know, if I have to pick someone out of B block, what I want to happen is I want Great O'Khan to come out of that and to get a match with Okada in the semis. But what I think is probably going to happen is Jay White's going to buzz right through and go undefeated, and he's going to
undefeated.
I think he's going to go undefeated, and because it's a short block, okay. It's only six matches. And I think that's a big establishing feather in the cap of Jay White to go undefeated through a block. I'm sure I will be surprised by one of these two blocks, because I also don't think that they'll go to Okada Jay White as a semifinal match. But if I'm in a vacuum, if I'm picking A, I'm picking Okada, and in a vacuum, if I'm picking B, I'm picking Jay White.
Right. I like, you know, the idea of him running the table is pretty awesome to me. I would miss the idea of setting up a future title defense. That's the only thing I would miss. But the idea of him running, oh, the heads would explode. You know that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and the title defense thing should not be understated. That's a huge part of what happens in the G1, is future title defenses are set up by people beating the champion. But that's a lot easier to do when you've got 9 matches instead of 6, right? Those 3 extra matches, often the times, those are the 3 losses, right? So 3 even is a lot of losses for a champion. But yeah, I mean, I just would love to see Jay White just like buzz right through. And they do, we like to spread things out, different accomplishments to different wrestlers. And maybe that becomes Jay White's thing, as he went undefeated through a G1 block for the first time in X amount of years. I'm going to have to figure out when the last time it happened was, because I hope to want to need to know that as we head into the last night.
Yes, I think you better start planning. C looks the toughest to me. Between Tanahashi, Naito, Kenta, Evil. Who's coming out of C block for you?
So that, you know, almost anyone in that block could come out of it. I think, you know, Goto's fallen on the wayside of singles competition, at least. So maybe he's out. And I think, you know, more than anything, you're looking at an establishing tournament from Hanare, you know, in all the best ways, right? But I don't think he's coming out of the block the winner. So that leaves Tanahashi, Zach, Naito, Evil, Kenta. It's tough to pick against Evil, just because then you put him in a situation where everyone just wants him to lose on that semifinal night, because nobody, you know, that, like I said, that's a valuable thing when you need people to buy tickets to an event on one day's notice. You want to see the demise of someone just as much as you want to see the ascension of someone.
Very good point. Absolutely valid point. Do you see Hanare getting a win over anybody?
I don't think anyone's going to go winless. I don't think we have especially because it's his first G1. I don't think you go into the G1, go winless, and then, you know, at that point you probably never get invited back. And I don't think that
he's got to get.
I don't think that's.
He's got to pin a name though here. He's pinning.
Yeah,
he's pinning a name.
If he's getting a win,
which is nice.
If he's getting a win, he's getting a win over someone meaningful, right? So, I mean, the lowest on the totem pole would be Goto, and even that is a meaningful win.
Yeah.
You know, but it's hard for me to bet anyone's coming out of this tournament with less than 2 wins. I think it's going to be really complicated as we get into kind of the block finals nights of you know, being mindful of things like tiebreakers, because it's such a short tournament. There's going to be ties.
See, people are going to be hitting that at the Chris Samsa. They're going to be hitting that hard.
Like
it's because you're right.
I know it's going to take some tiebreak math to break at least a couple of these blocks, because it's such a short, if I think about 6 matches into like a traditional 20 person G1, everyone's tied after 6, right? And of course the pacing of the tournament is going to be different, and they're going to spread things out a little bit differently, but like after 6 matches there's not that much space to create. So that's the fun part, is now we're looking at not necessarily how many wins you have, but who are you beating?
D block is, there's a couple names that I don't think will be in the running. Yujiro, I think David Finley's not going to be in the running that strong. Shingo, Will, you think Juice is in the mix there too?
So Juice is interesting because we've got this kind of reinvention happening. So he's got Will Ospreay on the last night of block competition, and they're going back and forth with this US title thing. So they've done this before with the US title. They did it with Moxley in 2019, where the last night of the block had Juice versus Moxley, which ended up setting up the title defense. Will, though, is at a whole nother level. Regardless of whether he's the US champ, he's in the mix for someone who could win this tournament. So I don't think that that necessarily precludes Will Ospreay from like winning the block, or from Juice from being in the picture at the end of the block. So, but that is kind of a wrinkle worth noting.
Who do you think comes out of this? Who comes out of D?
It's hard to pick against Ospreay because he's like the highest ranking person in the D block. And there's not really anybody that's close besides Shingo, right? Obviously last year, G1 tournament, Shingo's the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. You would imagine he's going to be in the mix, and he's got El Phantasma on the last night, which I think is going to be a hell of a match. And I think maybe there's going to be a little bit of a tie back to Shingo pinning El Phantasmo at Forbidden Door, which I think was the only New Japan on New Japan crime at Forbidden Door. So that may make things a little more interesting. Those are the two. But I think, again, if I'm picking in a vacuum, how do you pick against Will Ospreay?
Right. So Ospreay, did you say evil or?
I think evil.
Okay.
Maybe. I haven't done any official picks. I probably won't.
Count these as official. Count these as official.
Sure. Yeah. We're talking through it. I think if you're looking at kind of like the face heel spectrum, right? Like evil's as far heel as you can be. And if you want to push Will through, I think you actually probably need, someone further on the heel side, and Will just baby faces himself to beat evil. But that seems weird to me too. So I don't know. It's hard to read.
Well, you'll have that Jay White evil, right? And like the final four, Okada, White, evil. And, who did we say? Will.
Yeah. I mean, that
is that a bad final?
Sounds good. Mm-hmm.
Final four.
Yeah, because you got to figure evil gets bounced then, and then maybe your final is Okada Will? Jay Will? Can you go to Jay Will? I don't know. That's probably not the right thing to do.
Well, who's winning it? Let me ask you this. Who's walking away with the trophy?
Naito.
Naito?
Wait, what? I didn't even pick him to win the block, but I think he's probably winning the tournament.
How is this going to pan out?
I do think Naito's winning the tournament, but it's hard for me to pick him to win the block, if that makes any sense. Like, I know that I have to do that, but when I look at the rest of that block and I guess the layout of how the rest of the tournament is, it's hard for me to get to the point where Naito wins the block, except that he has Zack Sabre Jr. on the last night of block, the last scheduled night of block matches, and that's going to be a really cool match because obviously Zach ruined Naito's G1 last year, and so that puts them in a big moment. So
do you find that G1 really isn't that let's make a new star kind of thing, where it's they kind of leave it at the Mount Rushmore? Like you're not going to have Hanare blast through and go on this massive run. Does that disappoint you in any way, or is that just like, hey, the best man wins and these are the best men?
More the second. I think this is the place where a wrestler can stake their claim in like the history and lore of New Japan Pro Wrestling, right? Like this and main eventing a Tokyo Dome. Like that's it. Right? Winning a G1, main eventing a Tokyo Dome. Those are the two biggest things you can do in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And, you know, with that, the winner of the G1 is protected, right? But, you know, kind of as I alluded to earlier, having four blocks and then the semifinals in between the block competition and the final, that does create the opportunity for someone to go through and win a block, though not really be considered at that kind of upper echelon. But no, you're not typically going to get surprised by a G1 winner if you've been paying attention.
So we're looking at Naito taking the trophy home. Does he make it to Wrestle Kingdom?
Yeah, I think so. When Jay White won the briefcase from Ibushi, Ibushi still landed at Wrestle Kingdom, right? And truthfully, like, I don't know anything more than anybody else about two nights of Wrestle Kingdom or what the plans are and things like that. So, but I, you know, if it's me, this is Naito's last big opportunity for a big run, I think. Maybe not his last, but it makes sense. It makes sense to elevate Naito with a good, strong G1 here.
Do you think that's what's missing? Do you think him winning is and then main eventing again? Do you think that's missing from his stamp on this company?
No, I don't think so.
Like, if he didn't do it, it wouldn't be a disappointment.
Not for me. I like Tetsuya Naito. I'm not against Naito by any means, but I want to see guys like Shingo and Ospreay and Jay White have some of these bigger moments. Cobb, right? Those are kind of the big guys. The guys that have been there for a little while and they've had some moments, but they haven't necessarily like crossed into that, you know, main event Wrestle Kingdom, win the G1 level. You know, I want to see someone else step into that, which has been for 4 years. You had Ibushi, you know, taking up one of the spots in the final. And while that's a great run and it's very cool from a statistical perspective because it's so unique, it's a little more wide open now because you don't have someone who's been in the final 4 years straight, even in the tournament, which creates a lane for somebody.
Yeah. Speaking of Ibushi, what are your thoughts on this situation? Like, do you see him ever in a New Japan ring again, or is this just irreconcilable differences?
It looks pretty irreconcilable, but it's also pro wrestling. And, you know, coming from a American perspective, there have been far worse things that people have gotten away with in the pro wrestling industry than what either side of the Ibushi situation is. So I think that situation is probably really complicated. And I find it hard to trust translations with things that are super complicated and nuanced. So I generally just try to stay away from it. Ibushi is one of my favorite in-ring wrestlers ever. So it's very sad to me to see him in a state where he can't wrestle for whatever reason. But yeah, I mean, I think that situation is very, very complex as far as I can tell.
Yeah. I mean, I would be shocked if it just seems like it's this is a little bit too much for water under the bridge. But you're right, it is pro wrestling and yeah, stranger things have happened for sure. All right, so Naito's winning. Naito's going to the Dome. Give me your super strange dark horse. This guy's going to win, and if I win, it's 1,000-to-1 odds, but I'm putting some money down. Who's that person?
Win the tournament?
Yep.
I mean, I think the furthest dark horse out that I would place a bet on would be Great O'Khan.
That's not a bit pick.
Just, I know that there's a future there for him, and I know that that he is well respected around the office, I guess you can call it. And they appreciate the work that he does and the character that he's built himself. So I would never actually place that bet. I'm not the gambler in the family either. So that's
oh no,
that's the wife. She has her her bachelor's degree in equine science. So when it comes to betting the ponies.
The ponies.
She's won us some significant. She won us a whole new kitchen with that.
You're kidding me.
Well, over the course of a couple of years, she's made some serious good bets. We won, or she got the what's it called, the Exacta in the Kentucky Derby this year, and it was like thousands of dollars. It's crazy.
Holy shit!
Yeah, so she could be your go to pony girl. She knows what's up. But yeah, so she's the gambler, actually, which is, I'm sure, not a gender normative situation here. But yeah, so but when it comes to long shots, maybe I should ask her if I should put some put some my bookie money on to Great O'Con.
Oh my goodness, that's pretty awesome. That's pretty great. Hey, Chris, I got to be honest with you. This has been one of the most fun shows for me. I always get a little nervous, not nervous, but it's just like, all right, how's it going to go? And I usually don't follow the same format that Joel does. I like to get to know the people, and I like to have our listeners get to know. I'm fascinated. I'm more fascinated by you now than I was before. What do you think of that?
Hey, I'm just here to have a good time. So I don't know if that's fascinating, but I appreciate you having me. Before I sense that you're starting to wrap things up, we need your G1 picks, and maybe not every block, but who's winning? How do you see this thing going?
Come on, I was trying to stretch out content here.
Oh, you want? We can keep going. I got all night.
No. I would be do that.
Listen,
one
I do. Keep,
I have to do it now, don't I?
I do Keeping It Strong style, like quarterly, and that's like a 3.5 hour ordeal. So I can keep talking.
Wow. Oh, I can't do that. I get it. I'm an old man. Those guys are the young bucks, the young studs. I can't keep up with those boys. I'm in a very similar boat as you. I can't see Okada not getting out of A. I don't know if he's running the table, but Jay White, I think, gets out of B block. Although, again, him being the champion might be a detriment just because he has to set up future defenses. But looking at B, I mean, I can't see Ishii winning it. I can't see Tai Chi winning it. I can't see Tama Tonga winning it. I can't see Chase Owens winning it. I think Jay White gets out of it. C, that's the toughest one. C is very tough. Mm-hmm. You figure Tanahashi is in the mix to the end, just because he has to be, and that is not a problem. Zach, I think Aaron's going to take a lot more losses than he has wins. He has to mathematically. I do think Naito gets out of the block, but like if you're talking about tiebreakers, like that's where I could really see it being coming into play. And then D, Will probably is my pick. I think that's, again, I don't want to say safe pick, but I think Will coming out of there makes the most sense at this point. Right?
Do you think they go Naito Will in a semifinal for the first time though? Like that's
it is a match that is super protected.
Right, that's where I struggle to get there. I look at it that way, and I'm just like, is that when you do that, or do you do Naito Shingo on one night and blow the roof off?
That I think everybody
that seems fun to me. Both seem fun, but for business, do you save Will and Naito?
See, here's the thing with that. I'm not a fan of saving.
Sure.
Like I hate the idea of guys can get hurt at any time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like if you have that match, you're going to have it in a big building, right? And you can charge higher ticket prices. And that's what these semifinals and finals are going to be. I don't have a problem with them doing it, having a fresh matchup. I don't think you burn it. I mean, look, you saw, I mean, how many Tanahashi Okadas have we had? How many Okada Wills have we had in recent history? How many Ibushi? I'm not going to sit there and be like, well, we've seen it. But it's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
you know. And so if I see any of those matchups, you know, later on at Wrestle Kingdom in 6 months, I don't think I got much problem with that.
Yeah, no complaints here. It's It's hard to say because we haven't done the semifinals in so long.
Yeah, that's going to be here's the thing. That's going to be very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think the worst part for you is going to be those night six, night seven, and keeping that pace and keeping the stats. That's going to be tough.
It's not so bad because it's very, like I said, it's very varied. And there's like at least one notable match on almost every card. So it's not like there have been years when people just like avoided a certain block of the G1, and you can't do that this year. And I think that puts a ceiling on the quality of certain shows, right? You don't have that one show, like my favorite pro wrestling show ever, which is August 4th, 2013. It's like 10 just like banger G1 matches, including like Ishii and Shibata and Ibushi and Nakamura. It's like, it's just this incredible night of pro wrestling that happened in 2013. But like, you're not going to have any of that. But you also, it creates a high floor because you can have a good solid main event or just a good solid grouping of matches no matter what the show is. So I do think like the middle tournament doldrums might actually be alleviated a little bit that way.
Yeah, I think you got a valid point. Yeah. It's going to be different. I like the added spice of it. I like the idea of, you know, there's more opportunities for more guys to make waves in the tournament, right? They may not win mm-hmm. it, but there's more, like you're on the edge of your seat for an extra semifinal, you know?
Right.
Which to me, I don't see how you could complain about that. All right. So yeah, mine is 1:30, 1 hour and 30 minutes of talking pro wrestling. And that's where I reach my limit.
So, I respect that.
Yeah, and listen, I gotta know my strengths and weaknesses. You know what I mean? I run out of gas soon. Chris, they can find you at the Chris Samsa, correct?
That is indeed the Twitter handle.
And they can find you also at Voices of Wrestling doing your tremendous block individual statistics, histories, and notes that, again, I cannot – I think it's required reading. Like if you're listening to this show, it's required reading. You have to. And then also you have the website, right? What is that? That's Sport of Wrestling, right?
Sportofprowrestling.com. Yeah. So I'm transitioning that over to just being a G1 hub. So actually all you'll be able to find there, because truthfully, I believe that this tournament will be more challenging to follow than other G1s in the past. I'm going to change my website just to be, if you go to sportofprowrestling.com, you're going to get the most up to date, you know, really baseline information about where the tournament's at and how we got there. And it's going to be the block tables and the box scores. It's going to be looking like you show up to like a newspaper and you're just like, all right, here, I'm going to catch up on where we're at and I'm going to dive into the next show. So that'll be at sportofprowrestling.com. And then like the more wordy preview work, I'll be posting those at voicesofwrestling.com.
It's the best time of the year. You absolutely make the New Japan Pro Wrestling fandom smarter. You help people enjoy the product, wrap their heads around it for new people, and all the old heads love just kind of geeking out on these stats, and you do an excellent job. Again, I can't say enough, Chris, how much I enjoyed this and learning about you and your very interesting life. I got to be honest with you, home run. Home run, Chris.
Listen, I'm just here to have a good time. So I appreciate you having me. I can now check the JCast off my list of things I want to accomplish in the New Japan Pro Wrestling community. So all that's left.
Super easy.
I don't know what's left now. I mean, maybe this is my retirement.
No. You'll be. I'm sure you'll get a guest shot color commentating.
Listen, I'd get on the plane.
That's your future.
Wow. We'll see. We'll see about all that. I have some things in the pipeline per se.
Ooh.
Nothing to talk about just yet, but not necessarily that. But yeah, I'll be around.
I look forward to it. All right. So I got to do some plugs here. So yeah, redcircle.com/whatever we are, throw us some money. We're on Pro Wrestling Tees. If you want to buy a t-shirt, that would be pretty cool. That makes us feel important if you want to do that. ProWrestlingTees.com, Super JCast. You want to follow Editor Dan? He's got that Escape the Box, the band that is taking over They'll be headlining Glastonbury soon. I don't know if you know that, Chris. They'll be headlining Glastonbury.
I'm an Escape the Box listener, so.
Is that right?
Of course.
Nice.
Yeah. And somebody I know and trust throws out the name of a band and says that they're good. I'm going to listen, and they're good. It's good stuff.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, I know that Dan would appreciate that, and they're doing some great things. He's recovering well, everyone, by the way, from his biking accident. He's recovering well, from what I understand. But he's a busy guy with Escape the Box. So follow them. Lousy Hero 219, is it, on Twitter? Something like that. I don't have a Twitter, so I don't.
You're a smart man.
I just can't do it. I just can't handle it. I have like a phony one so I can keep up with hockey stuff and shit, but... That's a tough world for me. Say hi to Joel. Follow him if you want the Discord link. All that fun stuff. That's it. We'll be back again next week. I'll have someone else, certainly not as great as Chris or Nicole. That's going to be tough for that third person. I wonder who it might be. I don't even know yet. I got to send Joel's like, did you get anybody for the? I was like, I'm going to hit up Chris. He's like, all right, make sure you do it. Don't fucking forget. So I did. All right, Chris Sampson, we thank you very much. Thanks for listening. Take care, everybody. And as Joel would say, goodbye.